Welcome to another episode of the Heritage at the Heart podcast series. And we are here today with Fergal McNamara of 7L Architects. You're very welcome, Fergal.
Thanks, Shirley.
So, Fergal, you're involved in some projects in Clonus. And how did you get involved in those?
It was about 2018, 19. And there was discussions around the Leonard Arms Hotel in the centre of the town, which is right beside the Wee Abbey, which is one part of monastic Clonus. And the senior architect then in the OPW, Anna Dolan, asked me to kind of have a look at what the potential was for the hotel and how it's, I suppose, its setting relative to the Wee Abbey, how that could be, you know, enhanced. And at the time, there was some discussions about whether you might demolish the Leonard Arms Hotel, although it was a protected structure because it had become an eyesore over the previous 10 years or so. And that kind of led to looking at that part of Clonus, I suppose the monastic Clonus, and seeing what other, I suppose, potential there is for the area, because one of the kind of the outstanding kind of considerations that the Office of Public Works were looking at, and also everybody in Monaghan County Council at the time, was what to do about the High Cross in the diamond. And that sort of, there was a number, I believe, versions of where that might go, because there was consideration about its condition there, how it might have been deteriorating over time, being outside and near the traffic.
And the age of it, of course, is about 1,000 years old, isn't it, the
Absolutely,
High Cross?
Absolutely, 1,000 years old. And it's not in its original location, which was interesting. So originally it would have been close to where the shrine is now and the round tower, just behind. So Clonus would have started at the back of where the centre is now, in a way. That's where the monastic site is. So that is Wee Abbey, the round tower, and obviously the Clonus shrine, the house-shaped shrine.
So that's, a lot of people don't even know that Clonus has a round tower or house-shaped shrine.
It's hidden in there, isn't it?
It's kind of at the back of the drumlins. You don't really see it straight away.
No, absolutely. And then obviously before that, before Clonus became, you know, in I suppose the 17th century, it's sort of the heyday that we see today had started, but its history goes way, way back, you know, to the 6th century.
Yeah.
With St. Tiernach, you know, founding his monastery there. And what we see today is far later than that, you know, the round tower. I don't know precisely, but sometime after maybe the 10th century. And then the other evidence would be the shrine, of course, that we'll be talking about. And then the Wee Abbey comes later. That's a later stage.
Mm.
And then we have this kind of gap in time until, you know, the 17th century, when the streets were laid out. And at that stage, McCurtain Street would have been driven up across the monastic site to separate the Wee Abbey from the Round Tower, create two graveyards on the way up the hill to the diamond.
Yeah.
And at that stage, the High Cross probably was relocated into the diamond, become the focus, and it kind of took, whereas before it had been a kind of a religious, more religious monument in relation to the monastic site, it became, I suppose, in a way, another type of cross, which is like a market cross.
Yeah, and it's almost nearly an art piece then, in more recent times, in the middle of town.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
And when you came to Clonus first, were you surprised at how much, you know, archaeology or history there is in the town?
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Galway originally, so I didn't have much call to be going up to Monaghan, and so I was so impressed with the richness that you have there from every phase, really, and it's all of like really good quality. And we were just discussing there how it might compare to similar towns like Kildare or Kells, which are much more celebrated. But I mean, Clonus has an awful lot to offer, and in such a small, relatively small, compact core, you can see some of the very, you know, very impressive banks from the 19th century, and, you know, interesting houses.
There's a lovely row of arts and crafts houses at the top there, isn't there, behind the High Cross?
Exactly. Yeah. And even across, there's a lovely that heritage centre across from the graveyard is lovely.
The Cassandra Hand, Wee School.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So there's so much to see, and with the work I do, you're often involved in, I suppose, heritage in terms of a kind of a tourism lens to a degree. And you kind of think that Clonus is somewhere you could very easily spend a nice morning or day, you know, visiting and learning about all the different phases of Irish history, because it's all represented there, really, an awful lot of it. So we have, you know, the monastic site, and then we have, of course, the Mott and Bailey as well. And then there's, I suppose, we don't know for certain whether that was already a place of significance even during the monastic period or before that.
So to describe to people, I suppose, what we're talking about is, like, the Mott and Bailey is up on the height behind the Church of Ireland up in Clonus on top of the hill.
Yeah.
And the Mott and Bailey is a kind of a terraced hill, and in a flat part we'd put some army, maybe, is that?
That's it. So kind of, the Anglo-Normans would have, when their first wave of colonisation, before they had everything in place to do big stone castles and towns. They used to, when they first kind of came to a new place to conquer, as it were, they often looked at, you know, existing forts or existing castles that came from, you know, I suppose, the Gaelic chieftains and families, and they would plonk themselves there, and they would adapt it to make a kind of a defensible place, which would be the Mott, which is really an artificial hill.
Mm.
And on top of that, they would have put a stockade or a palisade, and they would call that the castle, or the keep. And then on the low area, there would be a kind of an open ground, which would be the settlement, which would be the bailey.
Yeah.
And again, there would be a stockade across that. And that's what you have in Clonus. And then that would have been, it seems possible that it was adapted later on as well. In the plantation period, there was it was used again, reused for defence at that stage in the corner of the bailey. I believe there's a defensive feature, and then also has a strange, it's like a jelly mould shape to it, that you see described in 18th century images of the town. It still looks very prominent, so it's always been a kind of a landmark for the town. But in the last, say, 50 or 60 years, with the lack of kind of grazing, trees have kind of taken over saplings. So now it's quite a dense thicket. And the idea there would be to, I suppose, reclaim a bit of that. Now, we're all very conscious that, you know, we don't want to raise all the trees to the ground, but we just want to take a little bit back, clear it away, and make it accessible for people to come and visit and to reinstate the views. Because from there, you can kind of just see between the branches, and, you know, when the leaves are down, you can see the round tower, you can see the landscape all around.
There's a tremendous view from up there, actually.
Yeah,
it's almost 360, isn't it, the whole way around?
Absolutely, yeah.
But I love your description of it now as a jelly mould. So that's an upside-down jelly mould.
Yeah, exactly.
For people who don't know what the Mott looks like in Clonus.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can walk so easily between that and the round tower. It's only a five-minute walk between any of the sites in Clonus.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the Anglo-Normans in Clonus only lasted about a year, didn't they? They didn't actually ever get to build their castle.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's what I understand.
Yeah.
So I suppose, I'm not an archaeologist or a historian, so I just pick up the bits that I need.
Yeah, but as well as that, I mean, you have to work with other professionals or other experts in the field, including local historians,
absolutely,
to get a real overview of a place, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no point coming at it yourself and saying, I'll be able to know all of this.
And, you know, you have to be informed and humble, and you have to try and understand a place properly before you make any suggestions. And you can't do that by yourself, because we have our own training and interests, and it's not enough. Like, it doesn't capture a place, so you have to have teamwork. And in Clonus, we've worked a lot with yourself and everyone who's in Clonus, because you also rely on people who have local knowledge.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then we also work a lot with John Tierney of Actra Heritage, who's very good on graveyards. He does a lot of work around the country in graveyards. A lot of people active in heritage would be familiar with John and his work. And I thought that he'd be very good, someone to work with at Clonus, especially because we were looking at the graveyard.
Want to describe maybe St. Tiernach's shrine to people, to what it actually looks like.
So it's very interesting. I guess in a way, looking at it, St. Tiernach's shrine is probably the smallest building I'll ever work on, because it has this shape. So it's often described as sarcophagus, which isn't quite correct, because that suggests a coffin. And this is more a shrine. And it has a shape as two gables and a pitched
roof
as it were. And that's a term that is used for that. It's called a skeuomorph. And what a skeuomorph is a shape or an object that is formed to resemble an earlier form. So in this case, the shape of the shrine is to resemble an actual real shrine that would have been made out of fine timbers and metal. There's a number of these survive on the continent. There's none in Ireland, but would be example would be there's ones in Cologne that they're meant to represent a church or a house of God where the remains of the saint would repose, and that becomes the object of the pilgrimage.
Mm.
So that would be in the church, and people would come to see the saints' remains as relics, and they'd be in the shrine. So
and would they sometimes be transported around then through the monasteries?
They might, yeah, and because that would be a lot of their power would be that they would have this shrine, and this would, you know, have this sense of this association with the saint.
Yeah, because I think in Dunamoyne, which is also in Monaghan, that St. Aonan's shrine was robbed there, I think, at some stage.
Okay.
There's a record of that, yeah. It was on pilgrimage at the time or on one of the circuits.
Yeah, so Peter Harbison is a great academic in archaeology. He wrote a very interesting piece about the Clonus Shrine in 1999, and he's the one who sort of described this skeuomorph idea. So the shrine itself is a shape of a house or a church. So we have a church, the original church, which would have been based on a timber church that became a stone church that has similarities to a timber church. And then we have a shrine that's built in the shape of a church that becomes a stone shrine that has the shape of a church. And in there that is the relics of the saint. And also, we know that sometimes these relics got sent abroad or traded, depending on the fame of the saint. But what's very interesting is that we think, now not me personally because I'm not an expert in this, but it is thought that the stone shrine may be in its original location, which would have been in a church, and that church, and we know we have a sense of that because of its location relative to the round tower, because traditionally round towers would face the west door of the church, the main church. So can you imagine that the church, now it wouldn't necessarily, considering the size of the graveyard, be a massive building, and inside would be the shrine of the saint, St. Chirnuch, and it would have been decorated as if in stone, as if it was a cabinet made out of, as I said, you know, fine materials. And one of the ideas is that stone shrine was created at a time of tumult and concern, you know, of that they were concerned about the condition of the shrine, and this is a way to make it more secure by creating a stone one, which would be harder to steal or to disturb, and the saint's remains might have been moved into that at that time.
So permanency.
Permanency,
so
yeah.
So basically, like you would do in the museum now, you'd put sort of lasers and all sorts of security cameras and everything on your on your very important relics. Then they made the skeuomorph, the stone.
Yeah, and you think about it, it's still surviving. The church is long gone.
It is, indeed.
if it was there, but that's what we think, because it has this context.
It's wonderful, though, that, you know, you think about that now gives you that fragment gives you the idea of where this church was.
Yes.
You can map it out almost from that. When you started the conservation works, because that's what we've done with the monument, it was cracking on it, and so to go through, you know, briefly maybe how we went about that.
So what's really interesting about all this opportunity that you had in Clonus was the new or relatively new Community Monuments Fund, which provided funding for sites like this in Clonus, which, you know, hitherto had no way of being supported necessarily when there's other you know, priorities. So it's this is money available for all these sites where some of them haven't been disturbed in 400 years or more since they've been abandoned, like castles and medieval churches. And there's so much around the country, that a lot of it wouldn't be as famous as Clonus are getting this funding. So there was a fund available to have a look at the shrine, and I suppose through your offices, Shirley, we were invited to have a look and see if whether we could come up with proposals to conserve the shrine and to apply for funding under this, this funding from the National Monument Service. So what we could see from the shrine is that it had been, works had been done to it, I suppose, as recently as the 1990s. But at that time, I suppose there wasn't as much of an understanding about the damage that can be done to historic structures from using hard cement or any sort of cement, really, that we understand. So that was something that kind of came in mostly in post-World War II. It became, you know, the standard, whereas up to then, we always used lime mortars, which are much softer. And the cement was done, you know, in a well-meaning way, had the risk of damaging the sandstone. And this is, so the sandstone block, we understand, could have been, you know, came from, say, for instance, Lisniski, which also has a high cross over in County Fermanagh. And it might have been transported to the site and worked on the site, and it would have been originally one big block of sandstone. Mm. And at some stage, that cleaved into two main parts, and they were sitting on these sillstones, kind of like curbs around the base. And when Peter Harbison was doing his article back in 1999, he had described the possibility that there might be a vault underneath this.
And there's always great excitement when somebody thinks there's a vault.
So, and that maybe, for instance, maybe the saints' remains still remain there.
Yeah.
So this is all these things we didn't know about, and we couldn't have known unless, you know, we get the work started. So you have to prepare yourself to, you know, cover the eventualities. But what's so important is that you have this multidisciplinary team where we had the archaeologist, you had the conservation architect, and in this case, we also, you know, wanted to get someone, the conservator.
Conservator, yeah. Very important.
And a stone conservator isn't necessarily the same person that you get in a museum.
No.
These people can work outdoors.
Yeah.
Because you're working with a stone monument that has to deal with the weather, and you're dealing with those kind of materials. So there's an element of an element of skill and knowledge and experience. But in the end of the day, we're still dealing with the same materials as we would normally. And the stone conservator in this case was Stone Art Conservation, which was Veronica Zemska and Tommy Maguire. And we were able to, you know, we tendered to a number of different groups, and they were successful. And they were very much part of it. So you were there, Shirley, one of the days, which is one of these days that you really enjoy your job, where everyone was there. And the first process that we did was we had to relocate the memorial tablet that was erected in front of the shrine. We wanted to relocate it out of the way because we had gotten an expert stone conservator report from Jason Bolton, who had identified something that we had kind of perceived ourselves, is that not only does the plaque kind of, you couldn't see the shrine properly,
just concealing it. Yeah,
it was also kind of sheltering a bit, which is bad because some bits get wetter than others, which can cause kind of stress.
It wasn't drying, Archer. It wasn't. You could see all the different growths on it. Yeah.
So the term for it is like a biofilm. So basically, it kind of green algae and everything had kind of started to colonize behind. So that was, and we also had to relocate the memorial in order to scan it again. So we got the Discovery Program involved, which by some luck had already scanned the shrine when they had originally scanned the High Cross.
Yes.
As part of a scheme that they were one of their projects countrywide where they were
recording. And just to say what a scan is. A scan is, isn't it, when they use lasers to kind of construct then a 3D model. You can see all the little crevices and all the inscriptions in really good detail, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And usually what you're kind of relying on is the sunlight at the time.
Yeah.
And you can kind of use lights to kind of make that better. But Peter Harbison and his wife, and back in 1999, probably spent some time and trying to get the light right.
Or torches, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you don't always have the opportunity. But with the laser scan, you can look at it lots of different ways and shine lights virtually in lots of different ways. But it's also a record there. Because at that stage, we were still kind of considering whether it was the right thing to do to leave it in situ.
Yeah. To leave it outside, whether we needed to take it indoors,
Whether we take it indoors. Yeah. So that kind of tied back to Leonard Arms. So we had to get this Stone Conservatives report, and Jason Bolton felt that it's, while it was obviously, eroding over time, that that rate of erosion was relatively quite short, like long yeah. period of time. So it might have lost several millimetres over, 1,000 years or so, because he can tell that from looking at the stonework with microscopes. And he was kind of a sense of that if it's possible and it's likely that it's in its original location, it's better to record it now properly in its site, keep an eye on it. Mm. We already have the scan from 2016, and now we can compare it with the one from 2021. And maybe in 5 or 10 years, someone will come back and maybe take that data and say,
it's eroding too quickly, or it's not eroding at all. Or it's not at all,
because we're already concerned with climate change. So it has this unknown. So after we got the moray out of the way, we have it scanned, and then we were able to record and show our intention about what we plan to do, which is really just take the cement away and replace it with lime mortar. But again, there was a bit
There's so much consideration even for that simple step.
How is the cement going to come off? Yeah. Is it going to cause stress on the sandstone? By taking it off, are we going to destroy what we're trying to conserve? So all of us being there, watching intently, on a sunny day, as it was.
It was a beautiful day that day.
And so Veronica would just take the chisel and tip it, gently to start, kind of listening in, hoping that, it would start to budge by itself. And thankfully, it came off really beautifully. So we could also tell that the cement had done some damage locally in that 20 or 30 years since it had been installed. So it was certainly beneficial to do so. And there was excavating down of the sillstone. There's a beautiful drawing of the shrine by Wakeman in the 1830s. And it shows it even more buried than it was heretofore. It was almost half covered by earth that it built up. And there's some interesting photographs also from, I suppose, the turn of the late 1800s that shows the whole graveyard completely covered in shrubs and weeds.
Yeah.
Because these things come in cycles, And not that it was the case if it was there, it'd been perfectly clear. But what we were able to do then was John Tierney, the archaeologist, was able to kind of undertake a kind of an inspection of the base of the shrine. So because of the way that stone had kind of fissured and cracked, there was little gaps, and John had a great idea. We hoped that the discovery program had kind of endoscopes or something that could do this in a way that was elaborate and cutting edge, but he happened to have a new camera phone that was cutting edge, that had the same similar sort of
It had LiDAR on it, actually.
LiDAR, yeah, and it had that capability to be able to scan. So he selfie stick, stuck it in the hole, and the hole was not much wider than the phone, and he was able to manipulate it so that we could actually see inside, which was very special. So we'd only had that opportunity when the cement was off before the lime went back on to have this look. And what was special to see was the beautiful work that had gone into creating this a vault underneath the stone. So it was just kind of this semicircular space. And John was able to determine that there were some human remains in there. So we have to try not to disturb those and to show due respect. But what we could see is that it was very unlikely that there was a vault, because those remains were right up on the ground.
Yeah.
And the sillstones weren't sitting on walls, they were sitting on the ground. So we were able to...
So it's a very small space, that little vault. Yeah. We're only talking about a few inches really, aren't we?
Yeah.
Of a space.
I mean, it's possible, like we didn't get into it, but it's likely that the remains that went in there weren't like a full person, certainly not in a coffin, and there wasn't a room, but it was still very special to see it. Then that was available for a few minutes, and then Veronica and Tommy got to work.
It was literally a glimpse into the past. It was just only available for, and only that we had that.
Yeah.
That John had that little bit of technology. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And then, like, so now when we're looking at the shrine, It's got a nice, better, I suppose, aspect to it now, yeah, in that you can see the whole depth of the shrine.
Yeah.
So the whole size of the sarcophagus, and with sitting on the ground, because it's much better presented now.
Yeah.
And like, what I would be thinking was, it's kind of, if you could try to get into your mind and imagine, you know, the sarcophagus or the funerary monument, you know, in that church, against a wall or whatever, wherever it was positioned.
Yes.
And then to imagine walking out the door and up to the round tower, you know, you can actually really start to imagine what Clonus was like when they were when the monastery was operational, and before the whole of the market town became established within the monastery, which is kind of what happened, isn't it, over time? When we're looking at these projects now, so we're looking at the Mont Bailey going forward now. Like, what would you hope would happen? You'd hope that we'd be able to maybe, you know, get some sort of an access, you know, using these ropes or whatever that we would use, sort of, so temporary kind of.
What we're trying to avoid is, you know, putting in steps and ramps, because you can kind of kill a place with that.
So something sensitive.
Yeah, so we were just looking at just doing simple iron rods with ropes, and it's really just to guide people up so they're not trying to find their own way up.
Yeah.
In the sense of, you know, stumbling or finding it too hard going. So we had that scanned using LiDAR, that there it's able to kind of find the form underneath the trees to a degree, and we could kind of, but you know, in the end of the day, we were able also to do it on the site, in the sense of just kind of, this is the way we'll walk up the hill, and with the rods, if it, over time, you know, from people, if it got popular, you could change that over time, shift it around, so that there would be less impact from people just walking up and down will cause.
Yeah, so we don't cause tracks in it, essentially.
So you kind of spread it out a bit.
Yeah.
And it kind of, those kind of desire lines would be kind of controlled in a way.
Yeah.
And then that would be, by opening up this kind of opening on the mot, so we could look south towards the monastic site and the round tower. You allow the kind of natural seedbed on the hillside to replenish, because they're no longer shaded by the trees locally, and then keep the better specimen trees in place. So it's just sort of a kind of retuning of the natural heritage and the built heritage and the archaeological heritage, so that you're not doing too much, trying to keep, it's always about
the balance.
The balance and the character. And like, we'd hope that it'd be kind of rediscovered by people who live in Clonus and also people visiting.
Yeah, I always think that that's really the most important audience for any of this work, for the heritage work, is our people who live in the area.
Yeah,
it definitely is. It's for their sense of place going forward.
Well, they're the custodians and the guardians. They're the ones who
they'll be the people who will be advocating for it in the future. And they'll be, you know, looking for it. So, you know, It's just a wonderful few projects, actually, Fergal, and thanks so much for all of your contributions amongst all of those multidisciplinary teams and working with the local community and that. And I'd like to thank you very much on behalf of the Heritage and Clonus for all your work,
thanks
for contributing today.
Thank you.
The Heritage at the Heart podcast series is supported by the Heritage Council and Monaghan County Council.